This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free.
Welcome to Living on Purpose. My name is Lynn Thompson, and I have decided to present to you a series of seven segments of a follow-up conversation that I had with Dirk Becker in September of 2007. Each one will be approximately 10 minutes long, give or take. For where this started was with episode 45, entitled Human Being on Purpose. Dirk Becker refers to himself as a socio-economic, environmental, political activist and ardent feminist who is fascinated by Ayurvedic neurobio-psychological predisposition and with birth order. This next series of seven segments of our follow-up conversation to that initial conversation in the studio at CHLY in July of 2007. Many of the ideas that came up in that original conversation with Dirk Becker and Nicole Shaw, his partner, who was also present in the studio that day, many of those ideas are going to be explored further in these upcoming segments. So today is part one of seven follow-up segments with my conversation between Dirk Becker and myself, Lynn Thompson, your host of Living on Purpose. And a contact site for Nicole and Dirk is synergymag.ca. To be in touch with me, you can email livingonpurposelynn@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening. Well, where we left off was an interesting place at the end of our first conversation where I'd ask you a poignant question that moved you emotionally. And when we went off air, what people didn't know was that you sat there very quietly with your eyes looking quite reddened, looking at me and I looking at you, to the point where I finally had to say, "Are you okay?" And what did you say?
I said, "I'm totally okay. Not only am I okay, I think actually this is more okay than not expressing emotion." And I think one of the things that I'd like to talk about in today's show is our attitudes and beliefs about emotion, particularly the differences between males and females and how differently we treat them, how different our expectations are as to how they express their emotions, and what is weakness and what is strength. And are these differences between males and females, are they genetic? Has it always been like this? In recent research I was just reading where a man can have, in essence, a woman's brain, and a woman can have, in essence, a man's brain. And at least in terms of science, aside from the psycho-spiritual and the transpersonal, in terms of science, they've found that if you have a higher level of testosterone in utero, then that child, whether it be male or female, is more likely to be born with more of a male brain. And male brain means, in this context, that that type of brain is going to think more in terms of systems and systematizing, known as an S brain. And if it's a more female brain, again in this context, it's known as an empathetic, so an E brain. So thinking more in terms of feelings and feelings of others, how others are feeling and how others are experiencing whatever they're experiencing and what is the appropriate response to that person in that moment. And then some people who are a balance of both, which I'd like to think that I am, actually can do both. They can think in terms of systems and structure and behavior and process and governance, systems theory, how people interact, birth order, and many of these other kinds of systems. At the same time, they can actually have feelings toward others.
Why do you think it matters more to some people than others, whether they're female or male-oriented, what other people think of them?
I can't speak for the rest of the world, but at least in this society, we have very much a division, as it were, between men and women, which I certainly have experienced all of almost 50 years, and especially in school where there's incredible peer pressure, and how males and females are delineated starting even before birth, where more and more people are wanting to determine the sex of their child. Then when they're born, they get either a blue ribbon or a pink ribbon, and the room that's being painted for them is either painted in boys' colors or girls' colors. They've done incredible studies of observing, for instance, how much longer a male child is allowed to cry in a crib before they are picked up. So we have incredible concepts as to the differences between males and females. And so the nurture-nature argument begins there. Are these children that way when they come out of the womb? Or do they become that way because of our preconceived notions and our stereotypes, our fears, our sociocultural conditioning, and how we treat them and how that forms their brain? And so I think a lot of these concepts actually come from outside and more the media, because there's so much money to be made in delineating, because then you can sell twice as many products. So if you could sell a deodorant, let's say, which was exactly the same deodorant as it were, and let's just, to make the point, put one in a pink bottle and one in a blue bottle, you are now increasing the potential of selling that product. That's why you'll see right now more commercials for women concerning beer and chips. I've noticed the last couple of years, they realized, gee, women are half the market. We need women to eat more beer. Sorry, drink more beer. I'm dyslexic. Drink more beer and eat more chips.
Okay, so in answer to what I was sort of wondering there as to what makes people so concerned about what people think of them, it makes sense what you just said in terms of however children come into the world, that unknowingly, perhaps, a lot of parents put a lot of pressure on them to conform to a certain stereotype, a certain orientation. And so, of course, children naturally, regardless, are sensitive to how people are looking at them and perceiving them for their survival. That's part of how a lot of us are grown up, right?
Right, and it's very individual and very subjective. Having said that, in terms of speaking in generalities, as a male, let's say, as a man, as a father, if I have a male child, and if I tend to be more stereotypically macho, kind of the rough and tough, in that situation, typically, and I've observed this many, many, many times, where a man or a father like that will have a child, and let's say the child tends to be, for whatever reason, much more soft and gentle by predisposition, by nature. They are just that way for whatever reasons, which we'll get into later. And so that father, because of his own fears of his own sexuality or masculinity, and let me just go to the side, segue for a moment and say, the vast majority of what we refer to as masculinity in the society is what Terence Reel in his book called I Don't Want to Talk About It, a very good title. And whenever I tell people the title, they say, what's the title? I say, that's the title. The title of the book is I Don't Want to Talk About It, Terence Reel. And he gets into what he refers to as hypermasculinity. That's the term that he weaves throughout the book. In that, he is referring to the social construct of what we perceive and project as masculinity, which is not masculinity at all, by the way. I mean, masculinity and femininity is an inherent characteristic within the human race. So after almost 50 years of all the things I've been through and the very unhealthy upbringing I had from my German father, who projected his version of Germanic, Teutonic, warlike, Nazi masculinity upon me, I'm about as heterosexual and gay, about as masculine and feminine as I was when I was 3, which is about where apparently children kind of have this sense like, I am more male or I'm more female or I like this more or I like that more. And so what we all do as parents is we tend to project onto our children how we think they should be, which of course is because of our fears of how we are or are not. And then we wish our children then to manifest and behave in a way that makes us look better and makes us feel better about ourselves. I mean, that's one of the reasons that people can be so incredibly horrible and reject and excommunicate a child or adult from their family circle simply when they suddenly announce that they happen to be gay. And there's a number of countries that have official policy. I'm not sure how recently, but Italy has in recent years said their official policy is they have no homosexuals. China has been very much the same way. And Thailand, you have girly boys where they see them as a third gender. So Thailand officially has 3 genders, but not 4. So Thailand officially has no gay women. So again, to answer your question, basically, all of us have some kind of concept of what male and what female and what masculine and what feminine is. And right away, as babies, we have projected onto us what those people outside of us, such as our parents and relatives, think that is, and they begin treating us in accordance with that in order to mold us to be the way they think we should be, which is not necessarily at all who we are in our essence as a boy or a girl or male or female or a very feminine boy or a very masculine girl.
It's amazing that any of us survive psychically or psychologically. I wonder what predisposes any of us to survive or thrive or get it sooner than later.
Starting with the science first and then going on to what some might consider more woo-woo approaches, scientifically, there seems to be a huge amount of predisposition, physiologically, neurobiochemically. So you have, for instance, some children, let's say boys, they just seem to be and grow up to be more feminine in terms of their body, in terms of how they conduct themselves. Now, I'm not saying at all that they are necessarily predisposed to being homosexual, or that they are, or that they will discover that. I'm saying simply that some males, ergo ones that have the sexual parts that are known as being male, can be very slender and very thin and very kind of nerdy and very non-athletic and may end up being very artsy or very scientific, and they don't display the typical characteristics of what we see as masculine. In the self, same way, there are women who may be obviously heterosexual. However, their body, their physical strength, the size of their hands and their feet, the sound of their voice, and even how they are in the world in terms of the brain, what kind of jobs they're attracted to, what they're good at. They may be drawn to construction, you know, as a carpenter, yes, delivering mail. And so they may be much more male, at least in terms of what we stereotypically see as male and as female. And so in terms of science, we've discovered more and more that there is a huge amount of predisposition that you just come from the womb and your DNA map, as it were, has already very much decided how you're going to be physically in terms of your body. And if you had both your parents were, let's say, very big and strong, meaning also the woman, then you're more likely going to be giving birth to, let's say, a woman who's much more like someone who's going to handle the cows and the sheep all by herself. There's a woman in the VIX who's really big and strong, and you've never seen anyone shear a sheep like that. I mean, she just flips that thing around like it's on tranquilizers, and boom, 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 and that thing is shorn, and the sheep doesn't know what hit it. My dear partner, Nicole, at 120 pounds, I mean, the sheep would get the better of her, I'm sure, you know? So one of the things that I find most fascinating, just jumping to the matter of emotion for a moment, which I'm so fascinated about as a man in my own experiences and still having negative reactions even from females when I show emotion, is that men are actually more sensitive than women.
Whoa.
So I really like saying that because, of course, that's contrary to what we see and experience.